I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, we got all your mailbag questions all answered 100% correctly or your money back. But we're going to discuss a lot about, of course, the playoffs, the NFL, the Buccaneers and the Rams on Sunday at Raymond James Stadium in the divisional playoff game. And let me just start off by saying this before we get to your questions. It's really interesting. You know, I'm on Twitter because I do Twitter, and we ask you to submit your questions that way and all of that. Very difficult time of year for Bucs fans because they kind of run the gamut of, you know, no one's going to beat us to, oh, my God, we're never going to win. We're never going to – how are we going to beat this Rams team that just demolished the Arizona Cardinals? And Steve and I, we talked about this before the podcast. Like, there's only 8 teams left. Like, one of these teams is the Super Bowl champion, right? And I don't mean for last year. I mean for this season, right, for 2021 season, 22 playoffs. Like, they're right there. They're in that group, right? And 4 of them are in the NFC, and 4 of them are in the AFC. And you're going to have to beat the other teams to actually get and you know to the Super Bowl and win it. So there's no cupcakes now. Like, the Philadelphia game, and you know, and I sat here on the podcast and I said, well, you know, they're a different team. They run the ball well. Their weather could be a factor. Forget all that. It was just, you know, it was a team that would not have made the playoffs until they expanded them to 14. We see why, right? Tampa Bay back in bygone days would have had a bye week the first week, and essentially it kind of was, except they got Tristan Wirfs hurt, which stinks if you're the Bucs. But other than that, like, look at the teams that are left, right? Steve, we talked about it. I mean, coaches and quarterbacks, these are all very capable of winning the Super Bowl type of teams.
Well, let's see. 7 of the 8 divisional winners are still standing.
There you go.
Only the Cowboys won their division and didn't advance.
How about them Cowboys?
I mean, you're talking Green Bay, Tampa Bay, L.A., San Francisco. All 4, mm-hmm. You from the beginning of the year, would have said capable of winning the Super Bowl.
Absolutely.
San Francisco may have been the outlier just because you're not 100% confident on the quarterback.
Correct.
In the AFC, it's Tennessee, it's Kansas City, it's Buffalo, and Cincinnati. Cincinnati's a surprise one, but if you watch them all year, you go, yeah, they can win the Super Bowl.
With one of the most outstanding young quarterbacks we've seen in years in mm-hmm. Joe Burrow, who will, you know, take your soul, as they say.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so you look at the teams left and you're like, yeah, every single one of these can win the Super Bowl. If you're not worried about the opponent, then the NFL's got a problem. If you're down to the final 8 and you've got teams, you're like, yeah, that's no problem. That's easy. Then the NFL's got a problem. But when you get to this level of the playoffs, and we always talk about it. I mean, you and I mentioned it before the podcast. Normally this week is the overreaction week of, oh, my God, this team just won in the wild card weekend, and they could win the Super Bowl. They're definitely going to win the Super Bowl because traditionally the top 2 teams from each conference didn't play last weekend.
It's always, oh, don't want to play those guys. Boy, you don't want to play those guys.
Yeah, but you didn't get to seeds 1 and 2 yet. Now, seeds 2 played this week, and they destroyed seed 7, both of them. Kansas City destroyed Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. Tampa Bay destroyed Philly. Mm-hmm. Both 7 seeds, mm-hmm. you could argue, didn't deserve to be in the playoffs. You look at their season, right. Look at their record, everything else. But when you're at this level, every team should worry you in the fact that you don't get to this level if you're not good, period. Including the Bucs should be worrying every team that's playing them.
No question. And listen, I mean, Sean McVay's a confident coach, a great play caller. They went and got Matthew Stafford. They struggled down the stretch. You know, they've had some injuries, obviously. They got Odell Beckham Jr. now. You know, you picked up on Miller. I mean, they've done things sort of what the Bucs did a year ago to try to fortify their offense and their defense. And the fact of the matter is that Stafford was wobbly down the stretch. He threw a lot of interceptions. You know, they obviously could have had this game in LA, like I said, and you know, they take on a Cardinals team without DeAndre Hopkins. Kyler Murray doesn't play well. Terrible game plan. The Cardinals have been bad the last seven games. I think they lost 5 out of 7 or 4 out of 6, whatever it was. And they beat the tar out of them like they should have. But it doesn't mean that the Rams are not a flawed team, or that because they beat the Bucs in Week 3, neither team is the same as they were in Week 3. And there's very little about that would carry over. If that were true, like we talked about, Steve, is that, the Bucs lost twice to the New Orleans Saints a year ago. And I mean, not by a little bit. They got shellacked by the Saints. They got beat by them twice this year as well. But then they went into New Orleans, and what happened? The Bucs' path last year, while there were no fans, and I can appreciate the fact that, it'd be a lot tougher to do it on the road the way they did a year ago. But it wasn't easy. Washington gave them fits, and then they go to New Orleans. They knock off a Hall of Fame quarterback in his final year at that dome in New Orleans against a team that had beaten them twice already. Then after that, it got even tougher having to go to Green Bay. I mean, in Lambeau Field with the possible weather conditions being bad. Again, only 9,000 people making a hell of a lot of noise, but all the expectations, Aaron Rodgers in the NFC Championship for the second year in a row, this time in Lambeau. And they take down the Packers just to get to the Super Bowl, which granted it was Raymond James, but it wasn't really a home crowd per se. 25,000 people. You take on a Kansas City team that had won the Super Bowl the year before, and you take them down. I mean, the path to winning a Super Bowl, by the time you get through it, you will have earned it, folks. There's a reason why they have the boat parades and they drink all that alcohol, because it's a hell of an accomplishment, man, and only one team gets to win. So, all these people, it's just funny to me. It's like all these people are like, ooh, I don't know. You know what? And you're right, Steve. Like the Rams, short week. 30-something hours behind the Bucs in preparation, in healing whatever injuries they may have acquired. Then they got to fly across the country and play a game in a different, three time zones away at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, which is like noon to them. I mean, there's a lot that people fear about the Bucs too, not to mention the quarterback.
Well, everyone. I mean, if you're not fearing Tom Brady in the playoffs –
right,
then I mean that factor alone almost makes your team more fearful than whatever opponent the Bucs may be up against, because you're going against the guy who's won more playoff games than almost every franchise in the NFL, who has more Super Bowl rings than anyone else, has more Super Bowl appearances than anyone else by a long shot. I mean, he's going for his what, 8th Super Bowl ring this year? Eight.
He'd be going to his 11th Super Bowl in 21 seasons. I mean, come on.
That's just ridiculous.
Just incredible.
It's, I mean, the accolades and the numbers, and we've talked about these, and, it's just how far he is ahead of every other quarterback numbers-wise. I mean, it's not even close.
I saw one today, one of my favorite ones today, and I don't have the exact number. I'd have to look it up, but I'm going to get you in the ballpark. So Troy Aikman, Hall of Fame career, right? 3 Super Bowl titles, hell of a quarterback, won a lot of games, threw a lot of touchdowns. In his entire career, Hall of Fame career, let's say, whatever the touchdown number, I think it was around 177, somewhere in there. Whatever his career total of touchdown passes were, Tom Brady has thrown in his 40s.
Come on.
Like, he had – no, it's true. I looked at it and went, wait, that can't be right. Tom Brady has thrown as many touchdown passes in his 40s as Troy Aikman did in his entire Hall of Fame 3 Super Bowl winning career. That's how stupid this is. I mean, you can't – I mean, like – you come up with these numbers and you go, that can't, oh my God, it's true, So yeah, this time of year, I promise you the LA Rams and Raheem Morris are not taking it too lightly. By the way, congratulations to Raheem Morris, who's going to get an interview for a head coaching job with the Minnesota Vikings. Really happy for him.
Yeah,
hope
absolutely.
He gets it. I think he deserves it. Done a hell of a job everywhere he's been. And, he was 32 years old. Don't hold it against the absolute train wreck that he took over with the Bucs back in the day. But,
well, and they weren't spending money
nice
for
job.
Him either.
Zero. They gutted the team. They gutted the team. They said, you have no money for free agency. Go get him, Tiger. Here's Josh Freeman as your quarterback. Or actually, it was, you know, more like Byron Leftwich and one of the McCowns as your quarterbacks, and then Josh Johnson, and then Josh Freeman. But, you know, first year was a disaster. Second year, went 10-6, and was 4-2 the next year until the wheels fell off. But I'd love to see him get him. Hey, while we're talking about sporting events, the Firestone Grand Prix of St. Pete's coming up, 18th annual. It's presented by RP Funding. It happens this year, February 25th to the 27th, so a little earlier on the calendar. The temporary circuit, it's a 1.8-mile, 14-turn configuration. This is really cool, down through the streets of St. Petersburg, circling Pioneer Park, the Duke Energy Center for the Arts, the Dali Museum, and then it extends all the way on the runways at Albert Whitted Airport. So I know you guys have been to this race. If you haven't, don't miss it. Visit gpstpete.com. That's gpstpete.com for race information and tickets. All right, so we got some exciting mailbag questions. Answered 100% correctly, as always. Let's get to them.
We'll start with Ellis, who tweeted us. With how handily the Rams beat the obviously outmatched Cardinals, the narrative all week could be that the Bucs stand little to no chance at beating the Rams. Do you think this could be advantageous to the Buccaneers heading into Sunday?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, first of all, they're favored as far as Las Vegas goes, so it'd be hard to play the underdog role. But I have watched the talking head shows this week.
Tom Brady plays the underdog role every day with himself.
he absolutely does. He will find somebody sliding him, and there's no, for whatever reason, whether it's Brady fatigue, whether it's, you know, pull on the Superman's cape. This time of year, it's very common for people to say, no. This is the year that Tom Brady's going to get his. He can't go back to back. He can't do that. That's all he needs to hear. But a lot of people, and I think they're guilty of recency bias. I mean, the last playoff game we saw was Monday night. It was an absolute, you know, knocker fest. I mean, they just, you know, they creamed the Arizona Cardinals. Stafford threw 4 touchdowns. He wasn't asked to throw the ball much because they had such a big lead, including the pick six that Murray threw. You know, the defense got after Murray because they were one-dimensional and not very good, and you know, it was a poorly coached game. They just weren't prepared to play the playoffs. So everybody's like, wow, the Rams, juggernaut. They play like that, no one can beat them. And you know what? That's probably true. Problem is, they're not playing the Arizona Cardinals again. You know, they're not playing them at SoFi either, okay? So everything changes. And, you know, I can understand, you know, sort of why, you know, people look at the Rams as a favorite. They're really not a favorite. I think the last spread I saw was like 3.5, I think, for Tampa. And you figure they're at home, so that's already a bit of an advantage. But that line could move. There's no question about it. And it will move if they find out that Tristan Wirfs or Ryan Jensen or one of the offensive linemen can't play. That's, you know, it's a tough – listen, this offensive line thing is real. I mean, we saw it, you know, absolutely cripple the Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl a year ago. There's no reason to expect it wouldn't hurt these guys. I do know that Brady got the ball out of his hand the fastest of any quarterback this year in this last game, 2.17 seconds. So I don't care if you're Aaron Donald. I don't care if you're Von Miller. I don't care if you're Leonard Floyd. It doesn't matter because 2.17 is not enough to get Brady on the ground. It just isn't, unless somebody just says, we're not blocking you on this play. So, you know, Brady is going to find his way to attack these guys, and you know, who's ever protecting him, he'll be wary of that. But you know, I think if I were Tom Brady watching any TV programs or listening to anything today, all I would have heard is, yeah, this Rams team, they're you know, they beat them earlier in the year and they're really playing well, and look what they did to the Cardinals, and the Bucs are beat up. So the narrative is already there. It really is. It's already there to say Bucs don't have much of a chance. This is where it ends for them, right? And that's all Tom Brady needs. You know, that and just a couple film sessions, as Bruce Arians is fond of saying, once he figures you out, you're in trouble. And I believe that. And I, you know, there's something about this time of year, and Brady doesn't care who he's playing with. He doesn't care who's not playing. He's going to go out there and he's going to put the puzzle together, and he's going to find a way to get his team in a position to win the game. Whether it's by 1 point, no points, whether they win by scoring 30 or 13, he's the greatest winner of all time. And so, you know, I just I think they will use every bulletin board material they can find. I think when Sean McVay gets around to talking, or the Rams get around to talking, they're not going to be very boastful. They're going to be respectful of the world champs. But the Bucs know who they're playing. You know, they played them. They've been on the grass with them. They understand they're a good football team. You know, that's the game that Gronk got hurt in out there at SoFi. A lot of things went wrong. Really, the game changed. We'll talk about it this week, I'm sure, is that, you know, that was a one-score game at halftime. The Rams got the ball to start the second half. The first two plays after the touchback was they absolutely stoned them. It was third and 10. Third and 10 coming out of the halftime, and it looks like the Bucs are going to get the ball back in good field position down a score. And they turn loose DeSean Jackson, who isn't even with the Rams anymore. He's with the Raiders. But they turned DeSean Jackson loose on a play-action play, and it went for 75 yards and a touchdown. That was the game. You know, that changed everything about the game. They wound up losing 34-24, I think. You know, Gronk going down obviously was a big factor. And it was also week three. I mean, you know, they weren't exactly in sync on either side of the ball. They had injuries already to their secondary. Sean Murphy Bunting was out at that point. I think they had another player down. So, you know, long time ago. And it doesn't matter. Like, none of that matters for either team. Just like it didn't matter when Philadelphia came down here. You know, we talked about, well, you know, in that October 14th game, the Eagles weren't running the ball. The Eagles' offense was atrocious, and they were throwing it. And, yeah, it got close at the end. But this is a different Eagles team. This is a different – you know, it didn't matter what happened on October 14th. The Bucs didn't have Chris Godwin. They didn't have Antonio Brown like they did in Philadelphia. They did have Rob Gronkowski. And, you know, instead you saw them getting, you know, gutted by, you know, guys like Keyshawn Vaughn and Giovanni Bernard. And, you know, so different cast of characters, obviously. But the team, you know, the Bucs still got it done, and got it done in much easier fashion than they did up in Philadelphia because, and this is not a small thing, like I can't, like over the weekend, the only home team that lost was the Dallas Cowboys. The only ones. How about them Cowboys? Well, they're the only home team that lost. Playoffs in the NFL with fans, home field means a lot. It really does. It really, really does. When Matthew Stafford goes to the line of scrimmage and it's a tie game or he's trailing, he's going to have a tough time communicating. And that crowd is going to get that defense fired up. And it's hard to play in those conditions when, you know, 75,000 people. And it won't be like, you know, when you had a bunch of Eagle fans in here, or Bills fans. I mean, I don't think that the Rams are going to travel their fans the way other teams have. It'll be a largely predominantly Bucs crowd that'll be even louder than it was a week ago, and you know, that should be to the Bucs' advantage. So but they will play the underdog role. They will look for reasons why, you know, everybody thinks they're going to lose, but in the end, none of that matters. It's what you do. It's not even the best team, right? The best team doesn't always win. It's the team that plays the best that day. It's the team that executes the best that day, the team that doesn't make mistakes and turnovers and penalties on that day. And nothing else really matters, and I think the Bucs will be prepared.
All right, John tweeted, in almost every Bucs loss since Brady arrived, the common theme has been to put pressure on him that leads to errors and sacks. The Rams have done it twice in two seasons. What can the Bucs do differently in spite of these matchup problems?
Well, I think one of the things you can do is not get behind. You know, in both those games, particularly 2 years ago, I remember – it was Jared Goff, and he came out and they threw it 50 times. And the Bucs got behind the Rams. They got behind Kansas City 17-0 in those two games. And both those games ended up being field goal games. You don't want to have to be one dimensional. You don't want to have to throw the ball, you know, 45 times with Brady. You want to control the game. You know, it's a complementary game. Obviously the longer you possess the ball, the other team's off the field, your defense stays fresh, you know, get off to a quick start, particularly at home, you get the crowd into it. You know, I thought what the most important thing the Bucs did a week ago was they took the opening drive. They were patient. I think it took like 13 plays, and they stuck it in the end zone. And that was a statement, right? That was like, here we are, right? And when you got teams sort of chasing the lead like that, especially if you're the road team, you know, and a home crowd is into it because they've done something big and early in the game. It's hard to overcome that. And I think that's the best thing that the Bucks can do is get off to a fast start. Now, yeah, they did put pressure on Brady because I think he was having to throw the ball. He wasn't throwing it quick. You know, the quick game, the up-tempo, you know, Bruce Arians did a couple things these last couple games. He went no huddle. And he went no huddle not just because you can keep the defense from substituting, and you tire out those big guys up front. You tire out Aaron Donald. You tire out, you know, Von Miller because it can't get off the field. But if you can move the chains in a no-huddle situation, you know, what Arian said is he goes, we went back and did some self-study, and it's like basically our best drives are when we're up-tempo for whatever reason. You know, guys have to get a little more alert. You know, Tom's calling the plays from the line of scrimmage. They can't change the defense that much. So whatever that thing is, that's what they've done these last two games to start it. I would suspect they'll do it again until it blows up in their face, until you go three and out and in about 46 seconds runs off the clock. But I would expect them to come out and try to have some tempo again. And, you know, they're still going to have to protect Tom, but their team is not as much vertical anymore. It's Brady getting the ball out of his hands. It's running the football, the occasional play-action pass. Look for Mike Evans if he's in man-to-man, which he probably will be with Jalen Ramsey, although that's a hell of a matchup against Jalen. And, you know, distribute the ball. And that's what they'll do. So, I don't know. They have a great defensive front. They have the player of the year in Aaron Donald. He's going to be a handful for Alex Kappa. And, you know, Jensen's already got a bad ankle. And, you know, Marpet's going to have to help. And everybody's going to have to try to find a way to keep Aaron Donald from wrecking the game. You're going to have to hope that Tristan Wirfs or somebody holds up at right tackle against the Von Millers of the world or the Leonard Floyds or whatever. But, you know, just they'll have a game plan for that. I mean, I think it's an advantage in some ways that the Bucks have played the Rams. And I think it's an advantage that, you know, you're not going to do the same thing. Like the Rams might do exactly the same thing and say, hey, you know, workforce out there in LA, why not do it here again? But I think the Bucks are going to have a different plan because they have different personnel than they did back then. And, you know, it'd be exciting to see just what they come out with.
All right, this one may be more of a comment than a question, but Paul had emailed. I see why now we have so many injuries on this team. A JV high school team would have Tristan Wirfs in the locker room with ice on that ankle right now. Pathetic times 10. He is sitting pouting on the bench when he needs treatment.
I don't know about the pouting part. I think they took him to the blue tent. I'm not sure. You know, they have that thing where, they don't want people to see you working on him or whatnot. It was clearly a sprained ankle, maybe a severely sprained ankle. And they would have checked to make sure that there was no fracture in there. Pain tolerance to some extent, sure. Is it going to hold up? It's hard to test it, right? I understand the question or the comment. I do. You know, the one that I didn't get was, you know, Chris Godwin tore his ACL. Generally speaking, and I'm not a doctor, so I don't want to tell anybody their business, but usually, you know, when you check the stability of the knee after an injury like that, you can feel whether it's a torn ACL or not. You might not know, but you can feel that there's some instability there. They didn't put him back in the game, but they certainly were testing it. It's just sort of it's a little bit of the nature of the NFL and of that position. I mean, Ryan Jensen had a similarly sprained ankle and might be the toughest. I'm not saying that Wirfs isn't tough. They were different injuries, but, you know, Jensen managed to stay in there and it probably hurt like hell. Now, he doesn't have to worry about trying to block an edge rusher. He's got help on either side of him with a guard. So it's not the same setup. It's not the same speed of an athlete that he's having to protect. So it's a lot harder for a guy like Wirfs. But, you know, I think if you can go as a starting player in this league, even if you're injured during the game, if you can go and they're fairly confident you're not going to do more damage to it, then they're going to give you a chance. And that's what they did. What they found out is that he just simply wasn't going to hold up. And if he can't hold up, now you're going to get somebody else hurt. Now you're going to get your quarterback hit. So he went in for one play, got beaten for a sack, ankle didn't hold up. They took him out, and then he was in a walking boot, I guess, on Monday. They'll treat that thing. You know, the great thing about ankles, if it's just a sprain, and I say just a sprain because it's not my ankle – but you literally can treat that thing 20, 22 hours a day between, you know, the ice, the hot, you know, the compress, the elevation, you know, all that stuff, lifting weights, trying to strengthen those ligaments, you know, and right up into and including a shot if you need it to try to numb it up a little bit and see if you can get through a game playing on a bad wheel. But he's going to have to be mobile enough to set up and protect Tom. You know, if he can't protect, forget about protecting himself, but he can't protect the quarterback, then it does you no good just to say you got Tristan Wirfs out there. So we won't know. That's one of those, I think, you know, he probably will not practice at all this week. May not see him until warmups before the game on Sunday, if he's a game time decision or if they don't rule him out before that. But, you know, I understand the perception. And like, I've had that problem too. Like, you know, I think Rob Gronkowski might have gone back out in that game against the Rams. I'd have to check that. But we now know he had a partially punctured lung. That's very dangerous. So the doctors do the best they can. They don't want to put a guy in more harm's way. But, you know, if you can go and you're not going to do further damage to whatever you just hurt, and you can tolerate the pain, they're going to give you the chance to play.
All right, Go Snarf it tweeted. Please answer correctly. When the Bucs activate Leonard Fournette, which running back goes? Could it be Rojo to IR?
Well, the problem with putting Rojo on IR is you're saying that he's not going to play for the rest of the playoffs. It's because that's got to be a minimum of 3 games. I think right now, as far as the rosters go, you'd have to look and say, okay, you know, do we need Le'Veon Bell? Le'Veon Bell was on this roster. He did not play in the game at all this past week, in part because you didn't want to get him hurt and then, you know, somebody else, because before you know it, you don't have any running backs. So they kind of held him out to make sure that they didn't lose either Giovanni Bernard, who was coming off an injury, or Keyshawn Vaughn. And so he was a little bit like their insurance, if you will. But let's be honest, Le'Veon Bell hasn't done anything in this league for a while. He was with 3 teams, I think, in this past year. And while he had a touchdown catch, you know, in the final game against Carolina, you know, they're not hoping that he has to play a big role. And so because Keyshawn has played really, really well, because Giovanni is back and did a nice job, I always subscribe to the, you know, last guy in, first guy out sort of modem. And if they do want to you know, get rid of a running back or move one to the practice squad or whatnot, I would think it would be Bell. It wouldn't be Keyshawn. It certainly wouldn't be Bernard. You know, they've also had Kenjon Varner that they've had up for a couple of weeks doing some returns and sort of being an emergency running back if they needed him. So special teams would play into that as well, because we know that Vaughn has done a nice job on special teams when they needed him to. But my guess, as far as being inactive or perhaps released and brought back down to practice squad or whatnot, would probably be Le'Veon Bell.
Jeff tweeted us, Rick, has the Bucs defense turned it on for the playoffs, or was their wild card game's defense an artifact of playing an inferior team?
Well, I mean, there's always a little of both, right? But I think the biggest thing was they had their guys. You know, somebody asked me this the other day, like, wow, the defense looked a lot better. It's like, well, because they're playing with their players. You know, in the NFL, like any football, it's about the you know, the dudes, right? As Matt Baker likes to say. And their dudes are Shaquille Barrett, Jason Pierre-Paul, Lavonte David. You don't have those guys sitting around to replace similar guys. Like, it's not like, well, we lost Lavonte, so let's bring in Kevin Minter because he's just like Lavonte. No, he's not. And even though Minter, you know, will do the best job he can and be a fill-in when you need him, and hope he holds up. You know, even Lavonte not at 100%, he wasn't clear till Saturday, is still Lavonte David. He's been in those fires. He brought a calm to that defensive huddle. He brought experience. He made Devin White just absolutely turn and be Devin White again and go and not have to worry about, you know, making a mistake or, you know, overanalyzing things or whatnot, trying to communicate stuff. You know, and Shaq Barrett, while he was on a pitch count, I mean, we saw the athleticism that this guy brings. He's really good against the run, probably a better run player than people realize. We know he can rush the passer. And I think the greatest thing I saw was him leap with a bad wheel, you know, a bad knee, sprained knee and a knee brace, and tipped the ball to himself, intercepted, and then the return was even more encouraging because he looked pretty damn healthy doing that. He wanted to take it to the house. So, you know, JPP is not himself and hasn't been since he, you know, injured that shoulder. He's playing with a torn rotator cuff. But you know what? He was out there with the fire. He was able to set the edge. He was able to slow some running backs and corral a pretty mobile quarterback a few times. And even more importantly, when those guys are playing, now the guys behind them that have been starting, like Anthony Nelson, who, you know, has had an off-the-chain year in terms of production with sacks and the amount of snaps he's played, and guy like Joe Tryon Shoyinka, who had a sack the other day. I mean, now those guys are your rotational guys. So if you need to give Shaq Barrett or give JPP a couple of plays off or a series off, those guys are fresh and they've played and they've been productive as starters for a couple games. So you're just deeper, you're just better. But it's really just the familiarity. And for the first time, if Sean Murphy Bunting comes back this week, this will be the first game of the season where their 11 starting players on defense are in the lineup. It's incredible because they didn't have 11 on the first day against Dallas. Then Murphy Bunting got hurt, and since then it hasn't come close to being the same 11. But this could be the first game, and so health is so important. We saw what the defense did during the stretch a year ago. They got the turnovers again the other day, you know, and if they can continue that and build on that, that's what they need. That's what the Bucs need. You need your guys back together. It's a huge emotional lift. It looks like they all came through the game okay, and I would think you just see more and more of them. But I obviously the Eagles are not the Rams. We've talked about how they wouldn't have made the playoffs in previous years. We talked about Jalen Hurts not being that experienced, but it's still an NFL team, and it was a really good start. They'll have a much bigger challenge this week, but I think you'd be very encouraged that defense has that look about itself and the pedigree, and they know how to get this done. They have done this before. You know, they have played good receivers like Tyreek Hill and won. They've played good quarterbacks like Aaron Rodgers and won. And this time it's at home. So no need to be, you know, too concerned. I would be encouraged by the way the defense played.
All right, Craig had tweeted us. What is the logic for Bruce Arians and his staff? They were up 17-0, got an INT. Philly has two timeouts. The Bucs run the ball, then call a timeout, giving the ball back to Philly. Luckily, Bradley Pinion had a great punt. It was a real shame the defense had to play another snap in the first half. Does Bruce Arians' game management worry you?
I think sometimes at the end of halves, you know, and I think I want to say that Philly was going to get the ball to start the second half, I believe. And so you want to do enough to prevent that 2-for-1, right? When you lose the coin toss and the other team defers, the analytics tell us that they're probably going to get a shot to have the last possession of the first half and the first possession of the second half. And we saw the Bucs do that. What was it against Carolina in the final game where they scored a touchdown in the final 2 minute situation and came out, scored a touchdown again, game over. And so you don't want that situation. So when you get the ball back, you're trying to run out the final few minutes of the half. And so they run the ball, you want to run a little clock, and then you go, okay, well, if we can get a first down, then we can keep this thing going. So you call timeout, and then you don't get the first down, and now you look stupid because you've given Philly the ball back with more time than you wanted to, and they can go the 2-for-1 route. But what you don't want to do there is you don't want to turn the ball over. You want to get out of the half with a lead. I mean, 17-0 is a pretty good lead. So you just can't make a mistake. But it's a situational, you know, part of situational football that they work on. Where you're kind of caught in between, where you want to use clock, you don't want to give them the ball back with any time if you don't score, but you also want to try to score if you can. And I just think sometimes Bruce, and I've seen other teams do it too, they get stuck. You know, if we can make a first down, if we can get across the 50, like, you know, when do you put on the gas and when do you just try to wind clock and limit the amount of time that the other team can have the ball at the end of the half. I don't think they did a great job with it. At the end of the day, it didn't cost them. And, you know, they ended up with a 31-0 lead. So I just don't think this is a game necessarily to pick nits. But there have been times when, you know, when Bruce and his staff have not been on, you know, been on top of it with respect to clock management. But I know what they were trying to do. They just didn't execute their offense. Folks, it's time for one of the best events this time of year, the Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg. It's set on the downtown streets, of course, of the Sunshine City in St. Pete. 8th annual Grand Prix, as a matter of fact, sponsored and presented by RP Funding. It kicks off Florida's spring break season with high-speed excitement. Please visit gpstpete.com, gpstpete.com, for race information and tickets. Another racing season starts right here in beautiful St. Petersburg, Florida.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, Jim and Terry had both reached out to us, and their questions are very similar. So Jim had asked, are there internal talks about Byron Leftwich or Todd Bowles taking over for Bruce Arians if he retires after this year?
Well, if they were internal, then we would know about them. listen, I think there's always talks, and at what level, how serious, and all of that. Right now, of course, you know, even though I think Todd Bowles is going to do some interviewing on Friday and then Saturday, of course, Sunday he's going to coach in the divisional playoff game. Some of these interviews are virtual, et cetera. Right now, you know, it's a funny thing because if you're Bruce Arians, you're pulling like hell for your guys to get hired, right? Like you want Byron Leftwich to get an opportunity. You want Todd Bowles to get an opportunity. But you want them to get the right opportunity, you know? And the right opportunity may or may not be the Jacksonville Jaguars, you know. It may or may not be the Minnesota Vikings. And, you know, if they get selected and they have an opportunity to be one of those coaches and they think it's a good chance for them, then you're happy for them to take it. You have to focus on sort of how do you replace those guys, right? With respect to BA and internal talks about one of them taking his spot, I think that's a little harder thing to plan because, you know, one, like I said, are they even going to be on the staff when BA retires? Here's what I think, as Peter King would say. I think that BA is going to coach next season. I tend to believe that Tom Brady is going to be the quarterback. If I had to guess, BA will coach as long as Tom Brady is the quarterback. And if Brady's not the quarterback, I still think BA will coach next season. So win or lose, no matter what Tom does, I think Arians is back, personally. So, and there's no other reason to dispute that. Now, do you tell a guy, you know, this they could have decided or could decide if they wanted to that, hey, we've got a head coach in waiting. When BA's done, it's going to be this guy. Well, which one do you choose, right? And how does the other guy react to it? I think it has to happen organically. I think if and when the time comes that BA decides I'm done, then the Bucs are going to look at their staff the way they would look at any other coaching situation and say, is there a guy on our staff we'd like to be the head coach? I just don't think they're going to have a coach in waiting situation, you know, because I think it puts pressure on BA to finish up, to wrap it up, you know, like, hey, get out of the way so this guy can be the new head coach. And then the other thing is, who are guys listening to? You know, I mean, are you listening to the guy that's going to take BA's job that coaches you on defense that you have a little bit, you know, more inside knowledge about and a little more of a relationship? Or are you listening to the guy that's on his way out? I just don't think it's good to announce your retirement if you want to be effective. And I don't see BA doing that. But, you know, if it gets to that and either Todd Bowles or Byron Leftwich are still on the staff, you can believe that one of those guys would be a really good candidate to replace him if they want to keep the rest of the coaching staff intact, and why wouldn't you? Because it's a really good staff that BA's put together, and BA would be thrilled for one of his guys. And he's got a bunch of them. It's not just BA. It's not just Byron, And it's not just Todd Bowles. I mean, there's a bunch of guys on that staff that he's worked with, some for 40 years and some for the last couple years. But he loves them all, and he wants to see them all grow and develop. And, you know, if it's not Leftwich or if it's not Bowles, it could be somebody else.
All right, Freddie had tweeted us, should Todd Bowles or Byron Leftwich get a head coaching job? Who is the next coordinator up?
All right, so, you know, there's always a guy behind a guy, right? And you want to develop these coaches, and you got to have a plan. You got to have a plan if Byron Leftwich leaves. You got to have a plan if Tom Bowles leaves. If Byron Leftwich were to leave, the next defensive coordinator is going to be Larry Foote. Their outside linebackers coach. You know, he's played, obviously, for the Steelers. Coached with B.A. in several places. I think B.A. sees him from an X's and O's standpoint. He's worked with Bowles. I think he sees him as the next guy. You know, like, bright minds, ready for the job. It's hard to compare him to Todd Bowles because he's not done it. But that, to me, Larry Foote is the guy that will earn that job. The offensive coordinator is not as clear-cut because you have Harold Goodwin, who's your assistant head coach. He doesn't coach a position per se as a run game coordinator. You have Clyde Christensen, who's a quarterback coach that has been an offensive coordinator before. You have Kevin Garber, the wide receivers coach that they really, really like. Good friend of Byron Leftwich's. He may go with Leftwich, who knows. The guy that BA wants to develop, that really sees him as a star, like, you know, in the way he sees Leftwich, is Thad Lewis, who's the currently the assistant wide receivers coach. But Thad Lewis was a quarterback at Duke, and he has played on practice squads in his NFL career. He's been with like seven different organizations, and you go, wow, that's like not a really great career. Well, it's a great place to begin your coaching career when you think about it, because he got to see how seven different organizations ran their offense, the head coaching, the whole, and he gets the big picture. You know, I think as an offensive play caller, you know, if you're a quarterback, you're a passing guy, it's like, oh, I'm all about passing the football. If you're a run coordinator or a run guy, it's like, well, I know how to run the football, and I'm a big run guy. I think Lewis sees the big picture. I think he sees how the offense complements the defense and how to win games. And so his experience at quarterback, you know, again, wasn't the quarterback in the NFL the way Leftwich was, played the position at Duke, played the position, you know, in the NFL with a bunch of different teams, absorbed a lot from those teams, from those experiences. That's surprisingly, I think people would be surprised that that's the guy that that I think Bruce Arians wanted to spend a lot of time with this year, grooming in case Byron were to go.
All right, that wraps it up for today. But a couple notes on the Tampa Bay Lightning. Steven Stamkos voted in as the last man in vote to the All-Star game. So you got Hedman, you got Vasilevsky, and Stamkos going to represent the Lightning at the All-Star game in Las Vegas this year in just a couple weeks.
Beautiful.
And we're taping this just as the Lightning-Kings game is getting set to drop the puck in Los Angeles. The Lightning are playing with four defensemen tonight. They only have four healthy defensemen.
Four.
Mm-hmm. Zach Bogosian's out a few weeks. Eric Chernak's still out. Jan Ruda's out. So Victor Hedman's going to get 35 minutes tonight, maybe? Now, as you're hearing this podcast, the game will be over already, but that's crazy.
That's incredible.
Mm-hmm. I've seen teams do five before. I don't remember. I'm sure it's happened, but I don't remember recently seeing a team go with four healthy defensemen.
Mm. So they'll have to bring somebody up, right? I mean, on this road trip, because they got two more games in California.
Well, maybe, unless Ruda and Chernak can come back. You got a couple off days until the next game Friday. But there's also cap implications of bringing somebody up, too, and they're right up against the cap. So they've got to worry about that as well. So it'll be interesting to see what they do and how long injuries to Ruda and Chernak are. We know Bogosian's out 2 to 3 weeks. So. And, Rick, over the weekend we missed this, but Champa Bay continues. The USF co-ed cheer team repeating as national champions. So back-to-back for the
national
USF co-ed
champions. That's fantastic. That's crazy. I mean, that is such a competitive thing, right? And they're so athletic, and mm-hmm. the whole synchronizing and all of that. I mean, to be national champions with all the Division I cheer squads and things that they have around the country, that's fantastic. That's a lot of great work for those guys. And good for the Bulls. We like that. Champa Bay.
Absolutely.
Another trophy. They need one. Just a reminder, the 18th Annual Firestone Grand Prix of St. Pete presented by RP Funding. It happens February 25th to the 27th. One of the best events anywhere, folks. You want to make sure you go see them race in the Sunshine City all around the bayfront and the waterfront there in the downtown streets. Albert Whitted Airport's just a great track. So go visit gpstpete.com for race information and tickets. My good friend from the LA Times, Sam Farmer, is going to join us this week. Unbelievable. Talk about the Rams, little Tom Brady. Good friends of Bruce Arians as well. So we'll have Sam Farmer on the podcast, which is always entertaining. And then we'll get you ready for Bucks versus the Rams in the NFC Divisional Championship at Raymond James Stadium with a chance to play for the NFC title again, possibly in Green Bay. We'll know by Sunday whether it's going to be in Green Bay or right here, perhaps in Tampa. So should be exciting. Appreciate the questions. We'll get back to more of those. If we didn't answer your question, don't worry. We'll get to it this week. For Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.